Welcome to the game.
It's a beautiful thing.
With Mark Duffield.
By golly gosh.
The son of a darkened shearer and a self-described ball-playing jack-of-all-trades.
We shouldn't be surprised, should we?
Who lit up footy fields in the southwest before becoming WA's preeminent AFL scribe.
My goodness.
And Glenn Quarterman.
Wow-wee.
A proud Victorian parked permanently in the west who would have played 300 AFL games if not for his incredibly small hands.
Goodness gracious me.
Together, they are Duff and Quarters.
You know who.
And this is your favourite footy podcast.
It's unbelievable.
Hello, everybody. Tuesday, time for the Duff and Quarters podcast. First edition this week, we have with us Josh Garlop, our magnificent producer, Golden Tonsils Reddings, who's now being recognised in the community as Golden Tonsils Reddings, which is just fantastic. Small Hands Quartermain and myself, son of Dark and Shearer Duffield. All right, guys, Tuesday morning, which means Monday night, West Coast, not very good. And I think we're going to break from tradition here and we're going to go straight into our Biggie Juice Juicy Topic of the Week, brought to you by Thirsty Camel Bottle Shops.
We've gone early.
Topic of the week. Okay, so West Coast beaten by 10 points by 18th place North Melbourne at Optus Stadium. Who would have thought it, and what does it mean?
Walking across the Matagarup Bridge before the game and the heavens opened and it was cold rain. It was really cold. And I looked across and there were North Melbourne supporters making their way and they were smiling. At that moment, I knew something's not right here. This is not going to go well for the Eagles tonight.
This is a
had they kicked straight early, it might have been a different story. Might have got a bit of momentum and a bit of confidence. I know it was that sort of a night, but I saw two sides out there, one with a hell of a lot more spirit than the other.
Oh, I think the West Coast Eagles showed a bit of spirit in the first half particularly. But I just wonder, in the wash-up of this, is whether there's a bit of the Paul Keating, this is the recession we had to have, in terms of finally the statement has been made by the players themselves that change is required, the list needs to be looked at the end of this season. How you tinker with that, because there's obviously a lot of high-end talent, as Duff and Quarters, you've pointed out, they've got a lot of A-listers in there. But they need to shake up that list. And that, I think, is – we're at the point now where we've conceded they can't win the flag. And now the question is, can they make the finals?
Well, you mentioned Paul Keating. I think it's more a case of I'll do you slowly, because that's what they look like at the moment.
That's getting a weekly run on this show, Quarters. I think it's becoming a little bit too regular. Look, I reckon I kind of partly agree with Skeet. They did bring effort early. I think – what were the inside 50s at halftime? 34-12.
Completely dominated.
They kicked 2-10, I think it was, to halftime.
3-10.
3-10.
Oscar Allen. Kick right on the side.
Oscar Allen.
Yeah. So 3-10 at halftime. So clearly poor kicking cost them. From then on, to me, North went lower, harder for longer. And you know what? Three words I reckon you can use, and not in their most damning form, but three words I reckon you can use about West Coast at the moment. Broken, conditional, and entitled. So broken in that their ball movement game is now broken. They're very timid with the ball in hand. They don't take territory. They go safely backwards and forwards across half back. They let the opposition set up in front of them, makes it even harder for them to use the ball. Conditional in that they have a lot of specialist players and that there's a lot of demarcation disputes going on about who was supposed to do what when something goes wrong. The classic example being Elliot Yeo and Jeremy McGovern arguing over whose man it was when Todd Goldstein got the 50 and kicked the goal in the third quarter. Entitled in that there's two aspects to entitled. One, in what you believe you're entitled to, and then two, in what you believe your opposition is entitled to do. When North Melbourne stood up and got in their face in the second quarter, the way West Coast reacted was kind of like, you're not allowed to do that. They fell for the niggle. They got ill-disciplined. They gave away silly free kicks off the ball. And they were still doing it in the last quarter. Luke Shuey was very lucky not to have a ball turned over in the last quarter. He makes a great rundown tackle, a great captain's act. It's a critical ball back. Then he goes back and adds GST right in front of the umpire, and the umpire has to give him a talking to. The umpire could have, in that situation, gone, okay, the ball's going the other way now, Luke. this is where they're at the moment. They're not in a great space.
No.
They're low on confidence and they're low on the persistence and resilience. Like they've been out-persisted and out, well, let's say the team that is 18th on the ladder beat them for poise and resilience.
And I suppose a couple of weeks ago, everyone said, well, the Richmond game coming from four goals down, well, Richmond's form's been...
Particularly in last quarters.
Been shown out to be not that great. And let's be honest, Richmond's, the fork is in them for this season. So, yeah, it's an interesting one. And now the question is, Duff and Quarters, what does Adam Simpson do? He said in the press conference last night there's going to be no free ride for players moving forward. And I had the argument on radio last night with a couple of boys about, or discussion about, Carl Langdon said to me, why, when the young players did such a good job against Richmond, the Foleys, the Edwards, etc., did they make way for the senior players? And I said, I think Adam Simpson was obliged, once the players like Shuey, Kelly, Yo, all deemed enough minutes in their body, training-wise, you have to bring these players back,
don't
you?
I don't think it's a time for mass change, though. I think...
Well, they've changed a lot in the last two or three weeks.
Yeah, 16. You've got to stick with what you've got. On paper, people keep saying they're right. They look great, but they're not producing that. I think you've got to stick with it and not change it up too much. But you've got to change up the way, the application, clearly. You know, they are out of sync big time. Duff is right about their transition, the way they're moving the ball. You know, there were a couple of occasions. There was an occasion last night you saw Josh Kennedy, Jack Darling both flying for the same mark at half forward and the small and Petrocelli waiting the kick down the line for the kick over the top. Surely it's one going up and Petrocelli at their feet and the other big down. Just little things like that, and there were a lot of them last night that just – there's no sinking there. And maybe this is a time for the good old-fashioned – let's lock you all up together and you can start finger pointing and getting and just pointing out home truths over a couple of swans.
Didn't they have a circle of truth last week?
I heard that there was a meeting of sorts, and I was told that Adam Simpson was quite strong in what he had to say to the players.
I'm saying, Adam, walk out the room, let the players deal with it for once.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I think well organised clubs
work it together.
To work these problems together. But one thing Adam's always done, he's been very consistent on this over his time at the club, and that is that he treats the club as a sanctuary for the players, and you'll hear him say this, you know, we've got their backs. You know, basically.
Said it again last night.
And he said it again last night. He said to the media, and he wasn't being nasty or anything. He said, we know what you guys are going to say. So, yeah, we need to own the performance, but we also need to provide support, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not sure whether they need home comfort right now. I think they need home truths.
That's what I'm talking about.
And I think he's delivered that. I think behind closed doors, there's no question. Adam Simpson, I'm really impressed with what he says publicly.
Yeah.
Now, he's honest as he can be. He's not going to publicly slam his players. I respect that. So on that basis, I think he's the man that is probably well positioned to guide the club through. What's a bit of a transition here and a really awkward end of the year, because they're not going to be – figuring, we don't think, at the pointing end of September, what do you do with a couple of the senior players who were pretty good last night? Kennedy and Hearn were far from their worst. In fact, they were probably in their best half dozen. But when do they start to turn over this list to get some young players in there to add some energy to change the look of it?
Carries himself well, Adam Simpson. We know that. He was the one standing at the end of the race as they came off the field last night, patting a few of them back. And it wasn't a, you know, good effort. It was just, I've got your back type of thing from Simpson last night. So, you know, let's not forget, they're eighth. They're in the eight. Now, they're not going to finish top four, which is where you need to be, particularly from over here, to win it. But they're in the eight.
It's a false eight, though, Quarters,
well,
at the moment.
They're
not playing good footy.
They're still in the eight.
That's what Carl said to me last night. But that's looking at the numbers, as opposed to philosophically speaking, this team is as low on confidence and form as I've seen them in the past 5 years.
But if they can just turn around their mentality. They've got Adelaide at the Adelaide Oval. No gimme given their form, but they can win that. They've got St Kilda at Optus Stadium the week after. St Kilda's been in pretty good form, but they can, you know, they fluctuate. You've got Collingwood at the MCG after that. Collingwood, okay, a month ago you were probably – you're a shoe-in now. That's a bit harder. That seems a bit harder, that fixture. And then they got a bit of a tough run home. Melbourne, Frio at Optus. How good's that going to be the second last round, potentially? And then Brisbane at the Gabba. there are some tough – it's a tough finish, but there's plenty of opportunity there. No, right now, no one wants to finish seventh or eighth. They're all dropping away.
Yeah, let me ask you this quickly, Duff. Do you think players listen to the talk that the media specifically comes out with, that the Eagles, if they don't finish in the top four, they can't win the flag, and now they're realising that's basically a fait accompli, that they can't finish in one of those coveted top four positions – does that affect their psyche about the fact that, not saying they've given up in any way, but does it translate into them thinking, well, this is going to be too hard for us?
It should. They shouldn't, because if in this era, this is the one era where something untoward may happen which enable you to win from the bottom end of the eight. Hmm. Now, we've seen COVID get completely out of control in New South Wales. We don't think footy's – we don't think the football – teams, the Sydney and GWS, we don't think they'll be getting back there before the end of the home and away.
Well, Sydney Swans will say thank you very much. They won't move there permanently.
Been on the road for 3 weeks, the Swans.
You know, it's not beyond the realms that the same happens in Victoria. Now, no one's wishing for this. I'm just saying that when West Coast looks at the scenarios which give them hope for this year, they should include this as one of the scenarios. It is possible that they may not have to go on the road even if they finish, you know, fifth, sixth, seventh or eighth. That's a possibility for them now. So they should keep that possibility.
Yeah.
They should at least keep their minds open to that possibility. To me, it just looks all a bit hard for them.
Yeah, it does.
Yep, agreed, Todd. And you know what? The ladder position doesn't lie. They're just an average side at the moment. They're a decent side without being an elite team at the moment.
Yeah, look, I know what you said about the first half last night, but the whole thing measured up last night, there was one team out there that was played with a lot more spirit. And that was North Melbourne, and I agree with you. I think, but you know, as I said, they can. Duff's right. Anything can happen. Aim, make your first aim to make the eight, and then just see what happens from there.
Really, it would be an abject failure if they don't make the eight. The draw from here is open for them to get to 11 wins in 3 weeks.
Yep.
I mean, let's not kid ourselves. Yeah, they should be winning their next three, based on what we see. On paper.
Yeah, well, we said that last night. But
I know,
yeah.
but at some point, West Coast has to sit down and be honest with themselves about their level versus their potential level and start climbing back to their proper level. And, you know, it should have happened before now. It should have happened last night. I think the conditions didn't help them last night. But I agree with you. I think that, you know, one team wanted to persist for longer. I'll tell you the other thing about last night. And it's just, we've talked about this, about his form in Tasmania. But in those conditions,
yeah.
Ben Cunnington goes from top 50 in the comp to top 5 in the comp.
Outstanding, wasn't he? He was just terrific.
You know how people post photos of themselves on holiday next to a pool and they show their toes and what they're eating there? Ben Cunnington posts photos of himself in the rain playing footy.
He was just
That's his nirvana.
He's Taylor. I mean, Jaden Stevenson, I reckon it's the best game he's played.
It is. Clearly the best game he's played full stop.
Jack Siebel down back.
Where did that come from?
Well, he just played smart, and he got near Cunnington.
Yeah.
Like, Cunnington was the source of all of this. Yeah, he was a colossus.
Mm.
He was the rock that they built the whole thing around. Simpkin was terrific.
Yeah.
Davies Junior.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, at one stage, shook four tackles off, which is not going to go well at the Eagles review.
Yeah.
But four tackles. A bloke that can step through four tackles, that's Fife, Martin, you know, Judd sort of territory. Like, if you're a North Melbourne supporter, you're getting really excited about that. Taron Thomas, when he wasn't wasting energy wrestling with Jamie Cripps, you know, takes a great hanger, kicks a great goal. There's a bit to like about them. Nick Larkey, Cam Zerha.
Zerha kicks straight. He might give four or five on that night, you know. Simpkin.
Yeah, and so as bad as West Coast were, we have to give credit to what North Melbourne brought to the table. And again, in the last quarter, tell me a person in this room that didn't think the Eagles, after – putting on a show in the first 10 minutes, kicked two clear, essentially.
I was iffy on it. It didn't seem – I know that they rested a bit of momentum. What, they get three in a row in the last? Anyway, they got the momentum, but it just never felt like they owned that momentum.
They kicked four in a row. They went from two goals down to two goals up.
They didn't own the momentum. You know what I mean? It felt different. It felt like North still had a bit of spark in it.
But it felt like the West Coast Eagles, once they got to that buffer – it was like, okay, just put the cue here and we'll just sit back and just sit on this lead for the – it doesn't happen that way. And unfortunately, that last 15 minutes was an example. I think you summed it up in your own way of a team that really just kept working for the full four quarters with talent that was nowhere near at the same level on paper as the West Coast Eagles, but a will and an appetite that West Coast could well have used.
There's two moments in that last quarter. I think Zerha had made a bit of a stuff up on the outer wing and went back and got the ball or halved the ball on the ground. Might have gone in hard. It might have been Brad Shepherd he went in on. Just really hit him hard, spilled the ball loose. North Melbourne ended up getting away with the ball. And the other one that just was exemplary and exemplified what North were about on the night. Josh Walker, who's an absolute football journeyman. He's a third club. He didn't really make it at Geelong. He kind of was useful at Brisbane when the Lions weren't that good, got moved on, ended up at North Melbourne. Jack Darling was in position to take a chess mark in the pocket. Walker had no right to get there, and he got there. And he got the fist in, got the ball over the line, got a stoppage situation when it would have been a shot on goal otherwise. These are the things that tell you whether a team is really up for the fight or not. And it's hard to think of examples, corresponding examples for West Coast. I remember Yo charging out of a couple of stoppages, you know, like standing in tackles, that sort of thing. But where were the other examples like that? You know, North will point to five or six of those things this week and they'll say, look at what Zerha did. Look at what Josh Walker did.
I'll have plenty of those examples to look at too. He's got a smorgasbord to pick from. Yo looked very, very sore.
Or the ankle.
End of that game.
Or the sounds of the ankle.
Well, yeah. Well, they're saying it's an ankle. It's an ankle.
You've got to believe them.
Well, yeah, you do. But, geez, he wasn't moving very well at the end of that game.
Jack Darling, now, is it a case? Does he? I mean, he's an elite forward. He's been at the top of his game for a long time, but he's not getting much of it at the moment.
I'm not dropping him.
It's a big call.
Yeah.
They do have this issue, though, don't they? And I reckon it's been an issue for them all year.
Yeah.
Darling, Kennedy, Allen. And they're all very, very good players.
But a night like last night was always going to be difficult for that trio.
Mind you, what, Allen kicked two?
Yep.
So Kennedy kicked a couple.
He contributes. Kennedy kicked one, missed a couple. Darling didn't do much.
No.
They didn't get a lot out of their small forwards. Jamie Cripps is another one I reckon will be nervous about selection this week. I mean,
it's not often we say that about Jamie Cripps, is it?
No, he's a really important player, and his work rate, he gets right back and he surge runs all the way down the ground. Mm. He may be suffering a little bit, I think, from their lack of bravery with their ball movement because the beauty of Cripps is his ability to cover the lines really quickly on long gut runs. Well, they're not getting the ball down to the other end, so he's not getting out the back after doing the hard work defensively. So I think that's maybe taking away from his game a bit. Just as a team, it's all malfunction, isn't it,
at the moment? Not sinking at all.
It looks like they're missing, he's long gone now, but missing that sort of corridor ball from Lewis Jetta, taking the game on, opening the game up.
There's no love out there. There's no love amongst each other. I mean, and I'm not being flippant. I mean that in a footy sense. It just doesn't seem that they're there for each other. And that North were last night. That was a difference.
Going through the motions a little bit, it appears, and that's probably harsh from the outside. But yeah,
well, it's not Skeet.
It just seems like they're turning up.
Not and harsh from the outside. It's the reality of it.
All right, let's close this off by: does West Coast make the eight and play finals?
Yes, they finish at that bottom end. Yes,
they finish eighth on percentage.
Yeah,
I still think they'll get there. So there you go. It's going to be a hell of a derby.
Oh.
Well, let's hope Fremantle keeps the dream alive.
Yeah, well, they can. They can. Big game on Thursday. But yeah, they can.
All right, we'll move on and we'll do a bit of a wrap of the round and talk about how disastrous our tips were.
Oh, yeah.
We are brought to you by Tab Touch. Get closer to the AFL action with Tab Touch. Please gamble responsibly and please call Gamblers Help on 1800 858 858. Okay, so a big win for the Dockers in Lonnie. I'm tipping this was not a seamless start to the coaching succession plan at Hawthorn.
No. Well, no, I don't think so. But they're really missing a few players at the moment, Hawthorn, particularly in that back half. It wasn't a great performance by any means. I was really happy for Freo. I mean, first time they get to sing the song in Lonnie.
And the other thing is, for Duff and for Quarters, that happiness insurance is always good to have. You tipped the Dockers, you tipped Hawthorn.
I was happy about it on Saturday.
Yeah.
And then as the week went on, I went, geez, that tip would have been handy. And you know what I thought to myself after 20 minutes? Like the Hawks did come out and show a bit, and then after 20 minutes that faded to grey.
It did.
And I thought, how on earth did I come up with Hawthorn as
well?
Down in Launceston, they've been
good at times.
At the moment, they're falling away. I think we've got to that stage of the year where they are missing troops, and also their confidence is low. There's a lot of youth in there. So I thought that for that reason, and Freo just had a little bit more momentum, I thought I'd pick him that weekend. Midfield got hold of the Hawthorn midfield. You know, the Hawthorn forwards didn't have much opportunity. You know, salute again to Fife for his 200th, and for Mundy, he just keeps getting the job done.
And Sean Darcy, who picked up the top vote from the coaches. And we've said this before, but he's just going gangbusters, and it's really good that he's healthy, he's playing good footy, best of his career. He's only a young man, so there's an upside.
And on
him.
Thursday night, it'll be a real tea show for Geelong, because he's a boy from the Western Districts, and Geelong, who desperately need a ruckman, could well cost them the flag in their window. Or how they would love to have Darcy in their possession right
he
now.
He wasn't going to get there in their window, was he? He's contracted till the end of next year at Freo, and by the end of next year, Geelong's window will be shut. So I think at the end of the day, while it's nice to dream about, it was never going to be a dream that comes true for Geelong. Darcy, I think, in the AFL coaches' votes, is the second ruckman placed behind Max Gawn. It's not bad for a 23-year-old kid.
Yep, and they've just got themselves in a nice sweet spot at the moment, Fremantle, haven't they? They've got a tough run, let's be honest. It's going to be difficult. And they've only beaten Sydney as a fellow top eight side this year. So they've got some hurdles to overcome. But what they are doing is playing some – and gee, I just hate to say this, but those two Carlton games, particularly the one at the MCG a couple of weeks ago, let's hope that doesn't come back to haunt them.
Well, it may, but they're seventh. Again, like we're talking about the Eagles, they're seventh. So the job's –
feel better about yourself if you're a Docker supporter, obviously, than an Eagle supporter.
Well, because of what's in front of you. But, I mean, you look at their draw. So Geelong on Thursday night. Sydney, now God knows where that's going to be played. It certainly won't be the SCG.
It'll be Geelong, won't it?
It'll be Geelong.
Sydney will just refuse to leave Geelong.
Oh, yeah. Hopefully Freo handle it a bit better than West Coast did. Then you got Richmond at Optus Stadium.
Well, gettable, that's not very
as,
gettable.
It's not as daunting as it was. Brisbane at Optus Stadium. They've got that run of Optus Stadium games. That's certainly going to help them.
That's
the game they traded, they exchanged.
Yep.
The Crackerjack Derby. Absolutely crackerjack. And then finishing off with St Kilda at Marvel. St Kilda going okay at the moment, but let's be honest, probably won't be going that well by that stage. They're up and down, mate.
The bottom line is that last round, it will have, I think, could have massive ramifications. Yeah. And the Dockers at Marvel against the Saints, let's hope we're talking about it.
Yeah, I don't mind them against St Kilda. I tell you what, I don't want it to be wet on Thursday night. I saw Geelong play Fremantle in the wet last year, and that wasn't pretty.
They chewed them up.
If you're Fremantle, does Hayden Young come into the team? He's played in the scrimmage in Melbourne. He's played in a waffle match for Peel. Played very well, apparently. Ethan Hughes also back for that game. Ethan Hughes is a player they like in the team. Are they looking at them? Is, say, someone like a Brandon Walker maybe likely to come out of the team for one of them? Or do you hold your ground and go with what played in Launceston?
Well, I was at the press conference for Justin Longmuir this morning. He did say the players, obviously it's a five-day break, as it is for Geelong, a bit sore. I asked him, I said, does that mean you've got a couple of players in doubt? And he, as honest as I guess he could be, he suggested that they'll be fine with the injuries that might be or the soreness that might be with a couple of players. So, look, if they make changes, it might be forced. I'm not sure they need to be tinkering at all if they don't have
to. Well, if it's a short break, it mightn't be a bad idea. I'd like to see one of the Hughes or Young come in. They might want to think about Mundy too. I mean, at his age, it mightn't do, depending on the conditions.
No, Justin Longmuir did say that they've considered regularly this season the prospect of giving him a spell, but every time they've gone to David – he said, no, I want to play on, which is the case. And I'd be quite content if he feels okay to play Thursday night. You've got to let your champions make that call. So I don't think there'll be many changes, but the five-day break have to be carefully managed. One that, and don't worry, Justin was asked about playing against the Cats, wet weather, and he said, absolutely, we're going to find out how much we've improved from last year when they really struggled in the wet conditions.
Yeah, Caleb Sarong kicked their first goal very late.
Yes. Last quarter, wasn't it?
I think it was the last quarter.
Just harking back to last week, their first century for the year, and Lobb 4-3 and Banfield 3-0. Like your column, Duff, Banfield could be really crucial to them, because if he's playing okay as that forward, you've also got the option of him going the other way and locking down on a player. So he's probably an invaluable player when in form.
It's handy for Adam Chera's contract, because a lot of people in Victoria think that's Adam Chera, Buddy Banfield, so you might get some more interest.
Yeah, that's pretty similar, isn't it?
There's some looks that are similar there. Yeah, that's it's falling into place nicely. But let's be honest, they've got their hardest part of the season to come.
Absolutely.
But you know what? Duff sitting back, I know exactly how he's feeling. Just let's not get too hyped about this. And I agree, but it is nice for them to be in a relatively healthy position list-wise.
You know
what?
I don't reckon it's the end of the world if they don't play finals. As long as they have a crack. This last finish to the season is crucial. Now, I know you might scoff at that and say, sure, of course they've got to, it would be better if they did, but I just want to see them progress.
I don't want to see Fremantle be given a soft landing pillow like you've just done.
Yeah, okay.
To me, they're in the eight. There's six rounds to go.
Now, there's to lose, isn't it? There's to fall out.
It's not a soft landing pillow, though,
Well, you've already said, oh, well, it's okay. No. They're in
there.
The eight. There's 6 weeks to go. They should be disappointed if they don't get there. Now, that doesn't mean it's the end of the world, but they should be disappointed if they don't get there from here. Because while they're playing top-end teams now, they're playing them at home. You know, there's four of six games at home here. Sydney's going to be tough on the road. Let's face it. Richmond are vulnerable. Mm. West Coast, we've just spent 25 minutes dissecting how vulnerable West Coast are. And Geelong, well, you know, Geelong's an old team coming off a five-day break. So we're talking about whether David Mundy can get up off a five-day break. Geelong's got about four players in that boat. So, yeah, I'd like to see it dry. I think if it's dry, I'd like to see Hayden Young play. Mm. If it's wet, I'd probably like to see Ethan Hughes play. And I think that the thing for Fremantle would maybe – this may be the week to give Brandon Walker a rest. I'll throw one at you before we move on. Would this be the week to maybe make David Mundy the medical sub? So you get a chance to rest him, and if you do get an injury, which is highly likely in a game.
That's a good call.
He may come on and play two and a half quarters for you.
In theory, it's good, but I'm just thinking of getting the W. And if you want to get the team across the line in slightly heavy conditions, bigger body, if he's right to play, I'm playing David Mundy. That's just – I mean, it'd be different if the circumstances, they're two games outside the eight or whatever. They're there, and as long as they can keep – winning or being very competitive, they're going to stay hopefully in that top eight. So, no, I'm if he's right to play, David Mundy's there for me.
One more quick one before we move on. Luke Valenti, 20 touches, 3 goals in the waffle. If they do go with David Mundy again and they do decide to make a couple of changes, is Luke Valenti maybe a chance to make a debut?
Let's have a look at him. Absolutely, yes. And, you know, even if they don't, if he doesn't keep his spot in the side, he gets a look at it. So he's got a whole preseason knowing what he has to aspire to, what he has to live to. I think it's critical he gets a game in the run home.
In the right circumstances.
Yeah, in the right circumstances.
Because if round 20 they've fallen away and hopefully he's in form, I'm not gifting any player a game. If this group of players is right to play on Thursday night, and I understand the weather and the factors, if Hayden Young, who's a really good young player, you could certainly tinker, but
you're not gifting him. He's earned his spot, though.
Yeah, but
so I think it's gift.
I'm not putting David Mundy as a medical sub on that bay. I think unless there's a spot there for him, and if you've won by 62 points, rarely, unless there's an injury, is there an opening. There might be one, but not many more.
All right. What else jumped out at you?
Well,
I think our
top six is done and dusted. Do we agree with that?
I think so, yes.
Two games clear. It's just what order they finish in. But, you know, kudos to Sydney jumped out at me.
So are Sydney now flag contenders?
Sneaky ones. I'm going to put the little sneaky in inverted commas. They might finish too far back. But, yeah, you wouldn't want to play them in September.
Yeah,
I think they can do some damage.
Well, Melbourne, the big improvers of the year, obviously. But Sydney is a team that sort of waiting for them to fall over. But if you go back to round one up at the Gabba, they beat Brisbane. And they've had a couple of lapses. Their young players have been given a breather just to freshen up. Horse Longmire's done an amazing job with this team, and they've been on the road.
3 weeks on the road, and wasn't it great to see in the old South Melbourne jumpers as well? The old bloodstained angels.
Yeah. They're deserving of being top six. And, in fact, the top four this year, I ask you now to make a case for either of those top four teams.
You can. There's a little bit – I think Hipwood's a significant out for Brisbane now for the rest of the year, but I still think they're capable without him of going all the way. I think Melbourne's capable of going all the way. Definitely the Western Bulldogs, despite their hiccup at the weekend, are capable of going all the way. Geelong
– absolutely they
are. Yeah, they are, but I just have them a step back from those other three at the moment. I do. I have some concerns over them. But
I follow horse racing, and they just look like a team. Yeah. I know they're a bit – bit old and slow, and at times they just beat Carlton. But they're doing enough for me around the bend in the horse race. They're just being cuddled along by Chris Scott to get through to the pointy end of the season. I'm not saying they're flag favourites, but I still think they are very much in the conversation. Their best this year has still been as good as most, I think.
Great performance by their back line too. And don't you love Rampy? He's just grows and grows and grows on you. If you're talking about a player pound for pound, just effort, he gives it for you every week, doesn't he, Rampy?
Yeah, and the bloke with the Christian name is pretty good too, Errol.
Errol, oh, yes.
Errol keeps on bobbing up in dispatches.
They find him, Sydney. They find him.
All right. So you mentioned Melbourne. Melbourne reasserted themselves, didn't they, against Port Adelaide. But Port Adelaide, if we're talking a top six, Port Adelaide is the sixth team in that top six.
At the moment, yeah.
Yeah, they are. I mean, another dismal effort against the top eight team, really, isn't it? I want to see them beat a top four team. I want to see them do it. They're just not – they're not doing it, are they?
They're not there yet. And they're going to be a top eight side. But for Ken Hinckley, he knows that there's a missing ingredient. They can't sustain as long as other teams. Melbourne – look, they've been terrific. We're waiting for something. They've had a couple of hiccups against Collingwood, et cetera, but they're doing a lot right, and their midfield's good. Ben Brown into the side.
I like that. Yeah. Didn't kick a goal.
Yeah, I do too.
Gave them a target, got on his bike, got out around the 50. I suspect they'd probably like him to be a little bit deeper at times, but he allowed Tommy McDonald to play deeper, and Tommy McDonald kicked goals.
So what happened? Pickett kicked goals. McDonald kicked goals. Ben Brown was present.
Bailey Fritch kicked goals.
So it's all – he just structures them up beautifully, I reckon.
And I would have gone Wiedemann. I put my hand up and I'd say I would have gone Wiedemann rather than Benny Brown.
But he did the job though, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. And he looked a little bit less robotic than what he's been.
So they're not winning the flag without a player like that, whether it's him or Wiedemann, in September. They're just not. And they need them there. So I was pleased to see it for their sake. And, you know, the usual suspects keep racking them up. Petraka, Oliver.
Great footage found by Kane Corns, by the way, he ran that on the AFL website over the weekend. So Max Gawn was running 100 metres to man up Charlie Dixon to free up Stephen May. So when the ball was inside Melbourne's attacking 50, Gawn would leave the scene and run all the way back to the wing and pick up Dixon so that May could be the offensive weapon that he's become for Melbourne. That is selflessness. Max Gawn, one of the favourites for the Brownlow medal, the favourite to be the All-Australian ruckman, playing that role because it helps the team. West Coast could use a bit of that footage.
And that's what, when you watch your team, when you pull a team apart when they've won a premiership, it's those things that count, really. They're the things.
Yep, no doubt about that. They're good to watch. I like Melbourne.
What did you make of Jamara Ugal-Hagen? I didn't have a lot of the footy, but
I think Luke Beveridge was vindicated. Like, he said he wasn't ready and he's not ready.
Yeah. Mm.
He doesn't have an AFL body. He tried to do a few things that required a VFL time frame, not an AFL time frame. It wasn't horrendous. Like, there were a couple of nice touches. He nearly took a good mark. He fed a ball through to a teammate for a scoring opportunity that wasn't nailed. You know, you can see where the talent is, but Beveridge has been telling people he has to earn his spot, he has to be ready to claim his spot. Well, based on what we saw on the weekend, if Aaron Norton's available.
Absolutely.
Well, he comes straight in. You know what, though? Once again, I'm glad he's got that game. So now he goes away and he can base his whole preseason on that.
But once again, not his fault he was taken as the number one draft pick. Well, but again, the pressure that comes from the Melbourne media, I've been watching it and reading it for the past 3 or 4 months, and it's been relentless about get this, why isn't he playing? Sometimes it takes 12 months and it might take 18 months before he's – and particularly a side that's playing as well as the Bulldogs. I've got no –
he was number one. You know, there's a couple of those Essendon kids who were also taken very early and there was a lot of hype around them. They're going okay.
Absolutely. And he may well go okay. But as Duff said, the coach of the footy club, he's not going to hold him back if he's ready.
Mm.
He wasn't ready and may not still be ready for another few months.
And the bloke who's actually playing his role in the team is Mitch Hannon, isn't it, who came across from Melbourne. He's a big-bodied, third-marking target in attack, gives them a real contest, gives them some real strength and oomph. Well, not through no fault of his own, Jamara Ugal-Hagen just doesn't have that yet. You know, he's a rangy, willowy sort of forward. He may be ready to do that next year. He may not be ready until the year after. So he's got a way to go, and I think you're right, Quarters. It's a great guide to him as to where he's at and how far he's got to go. But
Sunday at the MCG, he's meandering through a game, and all of a sudden, Collingwood-Richmond, it turns on its head. What a great last quarter from the Pies, and it's good to see that noise back, that Collingwood, the Collingwood faithful as they got on that 7-goal run. Just you heard the volume, didn't you? It was great.
I tell you what, you're gonna go back to, for Richmond and West Coast supporters, the curse of that night, Sunday night game at Optus Stadium between the two clubs, because since then it's been pretty average from both sides. Two clubs that we thought, gee, this is a good game of footy. Richmond outstanding. West Coast came back. Gee, don't want to play them in the finals. Well, guess what? That's turned. And for the Tigers, I think Jack Riewoldt's 300th game this week. That'll be a test to see whether they've got anything left in the tank. But they are running on empty.
They look sore. They look tired. They're missing troops, but they just look sore. You know, and I keep saying it. You've been to the buffet during the day. You're not going to want the 4-star restaurant at night. So I just think the hunger's gone.
No, well, that's what we've been saying for weeks, that the appetite's
been
sated.
To the Bayswater buffet.
Okay. A couple of things that came out of that game. Jordan Dugowie, new lease on life.
And what follows that?
What, the next performance?
A quiet month.
Yeah, probably. The other thing is, I reckon we saw the kick of the season on the Scott Pendlebury, who else?
Oh, yeah.
One of those late attacks resulted in a Jamie Elliott goal. Pendlebury gets the ball at half forward, facing the left forward pocket, and off two steps hits Elliott at the top of the square on the right side of the goal. Across the body, off two steps, 55 metres, clearing the opponent 5 metres in front of him. Pendlebury is a genius.
He is, and nice clearance work in that last quarter too, wasn't it, from the Pies?
And Taylor Adams?
Yep.
Next captain of the Collingwood Footy Club.
Yeah, that's been the talk for a little while now, and he's outstanding. What would the Power Brokers at Collingwood be, obviously hoping to win matches, where does this put Robert Harvey in the scheme of things?
He's kind of got to go on a run like Paul Roos got on in Sydney in 2003. Otherwise, there is just not the case. But what I do like, they're taking the game on more. Mm. You know, the other bloke who played was absolutely heroic in defence. Braden Maynard was asked to play on Jack Riewoldt for much of the game. It's the best. Braden Maynard's been a good player. You know, he's been sort of in the conversation for All Australian honours a couple of times. That's the best game I've seen him
play. He's been a good player for a while, but yeah, that's very true. You'd be a bit banged up playing on Jack Riewoldt, I reckon. He does throw himself at the contest.
And so you talked about Riewoldt's 300th. Mm. Are Riewoldt and Cotchin nearly cooked?
They have to be, yes. The answer is yes. Cotchin certainly looks more cooked than Jack. Jack's at least getting to the contest still. I think Cotchin looks like, you know, is it all too hard?
I could almost, not guarantee, but I bet London to a brick that both players will sit down at the end of this season and say, gee whiz, we fell away there late. We don't want to go out having performed.
So one more.
Absolutely.
Well, they can have a run at it next year because they've still got, I mean, they're still open if they get, they're going to get some back, but they are getting on.
I use the Brisbane Lions as a template and similar scenario, being good for so long. Yeah. And then the cliff, I'm not sure there's a massive cliff coming for them, but they're certainly on the edge of a bit of a decline potentially.
So, and the other thing about Richmond that we should talk about is, given that they do have key player absences and given that we're starting to urge West Coast to play kids, are we seeing anything in the kids at Richmond that indicates better things to come?
I think Coleman Jones, yes, I think so. I think there's – and Bolton will be around for a while if he stays at the club, which I assume he will.
I would suspect he's more likely to stay.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's plenty to like there. Lynch has got a few years left too.
But again – we talk about the appetite amongst the senior players. Yeah. You know that the younger players are going to come in and bring that energy. But how much energy is going to be from that senior group after we presume they fall short this year?
How old's Dusty?
He's 30.
Okay. Yep. Okay.
So they have got a few with the three in front of them. Mm. But the main one, Basher Hooley, is actually playing really strong footy. And he's 33. He's the oldest of them.
Mind you, I walked out of the footy last night with someone from Radio. He's a Tiger supporter. I said, mate, you're just about done this year. He said, yep, no issue about that. I said, but go back to 2016. If I'd said to you, mate, by 2021, you'll have won three flags and broken the drought, but then you can have a bit of a spell for a while. He said, take it every day of the week, as you know.
Absolutely.
The other thing we should do is congratulate Gold Coast. Gold Coast, back-to-back wins. A game none of us tipped. 1-point win.
Hello.
That was a sort of a spine-tingling finish there and a, you know, good defence from Gold Coast. Will Powell showing a bit in those.
Charlie Ballard stood up.
And even Tuke Miller, there was a fascinating stage late in the game where they wanted to get Stuart Chew, wanted to get him back on the ground, but because of circumstances where the play was, he had to play one short for a short space of time just to make sure that Tuke got back out there and impacted the contest, which he did. So fantastic win for the Suns. I don't know what to make of the Giants, but I think it's great for the Gold Coast to build a bit of momentum, even if they can win, you know, two or three matches between now and the end of the season. That would be massive for them going forward.
Well, when you say you don't want to make them, I don't either, but it's in Ballarat, this game. It's like...
And you had a slight mistral drifting down the ground, like as in a cyclone.
It was a big wind, wasn't it? It was.
So there are certain things...
Hang on, that would hardly favour the Gold Coast.
No, I'm not saying it does, but it was just extraordinary. There was a bit
about the Gold Coast, though, weren't there? They got in for the fight. Raul kicked a great goal off one step in heavy traffic in the last quarter. And it was one of those games where there was kind of opportunity and then every now and again an opportunity would be taken, wasn't it? I'm wondering whether Leon Cameron is sitting there thinking, Toby Green's banana, which was always going to be blown away from the goals, do you take someone punching the ball through and at least give yourself a shot at two premiership
points?
I
was quite shocked that didn't happen, watching that. They had plenty of opportunity to tie that game up, and maybe you're right. Maybe I was thinking that's what he was going to do, just try and get a score.
But that reminded me of Riley Thilthorpe up in Cairns against...
Is that name again?
Against St Kilda, when I've tipped the Adelaide Crows, they're a point behind. I'm thinking, Riley, whatever you do, just score. But, of course, he went for a drop punt, I think, and missed the lot. They ended up winning that game. But, yeah, Giants, I wonder how costly that'll be in the end for them.
Yeah, but they're still in the mix, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
And they've got a big game to come against Richmond. They've got a couple of other big games to play. And the Sydney this week.
Yep. Yes.
You still feel if they're good enough, they can get there.
So you think they're the most likely ahead of St Kilda and possibly a little bit of an outsider, Essendon?
Yeah, I'm not sure about Essendon.
They're 4 points off it.
I'm really excited by Essendon's list, but I still keep coming back to in round nine, Fremantle should have beaten Essendon at Marvel Stadium. And so if everyone's so excited about Essendon, why aren't we excited about the team that should have beaten them in
the
away game?
We are. I'm just saying I think they're the only three teams that can come in. And I think Essendon's a long shot, but I think
Richmond couldn't somehow miraculously resuscitate.
Well, they could. We know what they're capable of, but the signs aren't good for them.
Now, the Bombers, though, you're right, though. They're a team that, with a bit of momentum, and that game was unwatchable, by the way, Friday night. It was horrendous. Yeah. Adelaide were just...
Oh, well, it's their lowest score in history.
Terrible. It was just horrible to watch. What I'd love to see is a team get on a bit of a run, whether it's St Kilda or Essendon, and replicate a bit of that 1987 magic when we saw Melbourne.
Yeah.
Remember qualifying the last...
All the way to the prelim.
Remember the prelim.
Yes, of course, and Gary Buchanan and Jim Steins. But, yeah, those sorts of runs, and I guess the Dogs had it in many ways in 2016. That's the most recent example I can think of.
So who's having that run?
Well, that's a question.
Yeah.
But the Saints, given what they just produced on the Gold Coast, I'm not saying they will.
I'm not
convinced. No, nor am I. But that's what I think the competition needs, just to spice it up a bit come September.
If there's going to be a run from outside the eight, it would be a team like Richmond, I think. Or long shot Essendon. I'm not sure. What I'm trying to say is I'm not sure if St Kilda and GWS could go deep.
The collision between Duday and McDonald, Tipping, Woody. If you're a coach, I mean, unbelievable courage from Duday. Mm. But if you are a coach, do you applaud that? Do you warn against it? Do you just go, oh, well, it is what it is? Like, how do you react to it?
Well, I think you have to applaud it. And I think – I know where you're going to. And we are probably changing the way we play the game. Eventually you probably will be instructed not to go for that. But I think right now where we're at, you've just got to applaud that.
You watched it and you could see as he was going back there was going to be carnage.
It's one of those ones where you kind of curl
in
up a bit
crouch.
On the couch.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Sort of like
no.
You start wincing.
No, I know I'm sounding old school here, but I'm like quarters. I thought, you know what, you don't discourage your players putting their body on the line, trying to win the footy. He gets a rub of the head and say, mate, you might miss a week because of concussion. But I would not discourage my players from throwing their body at the footy.
It was the one decent talking point out of the whole game, by the way.
Well, that was it. There was not much else to like about it. Maybe Archie Perkins 3-3, but, it was pretty – losing Duday really hurt Adelaide, didn't it?
Absolutely.
I mean, they were probably not going to win it, but it just hurt.
Losing Taylor Walker going in, they believe – like the entire way they played was we don't have anything to kick to. It's going to be turned over when it goes down there, so let's be very careful about what we do before we take it down there.
Yeah, I mean, Billy Frampton was, you know, okay early and did a bit.
Did he come alive?
He's a WA boy, by the way, Billy. But, their attack was as impotent as, you know what, so there you go.
All right. So let's get on to the Saints.
50-year-old men.
Three in a row now for Saints. Three in a row now for the Saints.
Yep.
They look a different team. We've talked about the ruck duo, but also Max King's ability to trouble Harris Andrews in attack. Mm. Very significant.
So there's a lot to like about them. I haven't got a lot of trust in them.
No, you don't know which team's going to turn up.
Last couple of weeks, the good teams turned
absolutely.
Up. I mean, I think a big difference for them, you know, is Luke Dunstan's form. He's maintained that last weekend too. So, and you're right, King, it's amazing what a good target who's in form, taking the clutches, does for the confidence of the players upfield.
King and Membry, 24 marks between them.
That's big, isn't it?
In this game. That is big. And the other one is Jack Steele may be the best captain in the competition right now.
Yeah, it's a good call.
He turns up and plays every week. He plays at the same level.
Did it last
every
year
week.
Too.
He plays in the right way. Mm. He gives them stuff that the team needs. He's a hell of a leader, Jack Steele.
Zach Jones getting back into the the mix doesn't hurt them either.
Bit of speed.
Mm. Yeah. Maybe because I've got some friends who are Saints sympathisers. I want them to get there.
Of course.
And there's just something about – you know, they remind me of the English football team, who just they do so much right to get to the penultimate or the ultimate, and then it all
it's a Shakespearean tragedy, isn't
absolutely.
It?
Quarters, that's the most profound thing you said for a long time.
Mm.
What do we make about Brisbane? So they've lost Hipwood to an ACL.
I'm not too worried. I mean, I hope it was an outlier. He's going to be significant. You're going to have to replace him. I think Chris Fagan was alluding to that after the game. It is significant. I think they can still get the job done without him. It's a real pity, though, because he's been really a big part of that forward line journey. I guess the onus now falls on Joe Danaher to step up another notch.
They've lost a couple now. Is Rayner, who went early in the season?
Rayner's
gone. And also, Brandon Starcevic, is he okay?
The collision with the fence, this one fascinated me a bit. No malice intended whatsoever. There was a collision on the boundary line. It looked to me like a marking contest where Paddy Ryder half elected to bump and the opponent hit the fence. Mm. And the thing I immediately thought of was Jeremy McGovern on Matt Guelfi a couple of years back at Optus Stadium, which was basically just a tackle that went over the line a bit and into the fence. And McGovern got done for lack of duty of care, basically, to an opposition player. And I did wonder when I saw it, and Ryder went straight over and checked on Starcevic's welfare. But I did wonder, I thought, gee, it was almost over the line when the collision happened and the opponents hit the fence and he's hurt. I thought to myself, if I was the MRO, given what they've done before, I'd be looking at that.
If you're St Kilda, the one thing you don't want to lose is one of your ruckmen or Paddy Ryder particularly.
You're right. And you guys made the point, would have been a couple of weeks ago, the Marshall Ryder scenario.
That it's huge for St Kilda.
Has been a big issue, hasn't it? A big factor for them rather coming and winning
there's
matches.
No bigger, I don't reckon there's a bigger influencer at clubs than those two, that pairing, playing for St Kilda. Has a huge impact on their form.
One more before we go to the mailbag. The Bulldogs lost to Sydney. What do we make of that? Does it just underscore the importance of Aaron Norton to the Bulldogs? Were they tired after a few big weeks and a few strong performances? Or are we thinking that maybe Sydney found a hole?
Well, the two defeats I've had a look at of the Bulldogs against Melbourne, where they were cut up significantly on the bright lights of Friday night footy, and then against the Swans as well, who are a good side. We've sort of said, the Eagles are terrible, but they're playing some pretty good footy. So, yeah, it does ask the question, Norton just gives them so much more, doesn't he? Gives them that focal point. So I'm happy to put it down as an aberration for the Bulldogs.
I am too. I think I have faith in them. I think they're going to go very
every
deep
team's
in September.
Having...
They do, yeah. You have a loss every now and then, don't you?
Like that.
And it seemed like that was what it was. We'll see how they go this week, of course. But I would like to think that was a bit of an outlier.
So Sydney beat them and beat them comfortably. Lance Franklin and Tommy Papley kicked one goal between them.
That's a great result then.
Yeah, kicked the sealer, didn't he, Buddy? Did a good job, Keith, on Buddy.
Yep, he did.
So, you got something. You know, Luke Beveridge, when he's looking at it, will look at that, you know, and he'll take something from it. I think they've gone well enough now to be in a position that they can look at the positives, take some negatives out of that loss. But, you know, it's not the first time a team's been beaten up by Sydney and strangled in the forward line. They do that really well.
And every team, as we've seen, you go through it. Everyone in the top eight have had a game you think inexplicably they've lost.
Mm. Geelong v Carlton. Geelong got the result, we thought. They were led off by Carlton's poor kicking. The two blokes, I reckon, that if you were coaching Carlton or if you were applying to coach Carlton if David Teague situation gets rocky, the two blokes you'd be drooling over coaching are Sam Walsh and Jacob Wiedering.
Yeah, so Walsh All-Australian?
I reckon both All-Australian.
Yeah, fair call. What did you make of Tui and Henderson being jeered? They've got long memories, Carl.
Well, doesn't every supporter group have a long memory?
Yeah, they probably do. Been a while.
I'm not sure anyone gets off the hook when they leave a club to go and play for another club.
That's in the AFL. The NRL, they change clubs every six months, so it's too hard to memorise the changes. But Geelong, again, they're a team that have found a way, and I'm not sure what their average winning margin this year is, boys, but they have just done enough on enough occasions. But when it's come down to the crunch against the Bulldogs, for instance, the MCG, and we sat and watched that game together. In fact, that was Richmond. But when they've played against a quality team and turned up, they've got another level, and I know they have.
Yeah, you know what, though? 5-14, Carlton. So whether that was entirely Carlton's fault or that Geelong defence, we know we highly rate that Geelong defence, but 5-14, they did let them off the hook a bit. They could have won that game, Carl.
Yeah, Duff was just hoping that 5-14 was kicked about a week earlier.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it was by Fremantle. And, of course, the other one that just keeps rolling along beautifully for Geelong is Tommy Stewart. He was magnificent off halfback flank, so he's in All-Australian form as well. All right, let's move on to everybody's favourite segment.
Mail. Hello, Newman.
You control information.
Josh's mailbag.
Or Ralph Lauren, as we like to call him on this Tuesday afternoon.
Well, they make big sizes, Skeet. So, anyway, we digress. Let's get straight into it. Let's start with West Coast. Obviously, it's fresh in everyone's mind, especially WA supporters. Bob Firth here. West Coast supporter living in exile in Melbourne. I enjoy the show every week. It's great to hear the West Australian perspective and balance against the Victorian media over here. I'm not a believer that the recent issues can be blamed entirely on Adam Simpson's game plan, but it does seem the strategy doesn't seem to hold up in the wet. Is it a good idea to have a game style that only works if the sun is shining?
Well, we got a bit of proof of it last night, didn't we? I think that's a pretty fair point.
I think we got proof of it in round 22, 2019, when they played Richmond, led them 7-1, and the rains came and Richmond beat them.
Also on a Good Friday game against Port Adelaide.
The
dirty ball game. That was a classic case of a team who just altered their game plan to nullify West Coast, and the Eagles had no response. So, it is an issue. The wet weather form is it's a winter game, but it's certainly for West Coast, it seems more pronounced than other clubs.
But you know what? Like, I don't think they may have to adopt a different game plan for wet weather, but they do have the best stoppage ruckman in history. And they do have some very powerful midfielders in and around the stoppage. And when they surged last night, they were the ones that got them into the game. So if wet weather footy is a territory game, then why not put your A team into the stoppage, get the territory set up behind it, dare them to kick through you? You know, if they'd have played that game all night last night, I'm tipping they walk off with the W and they're seventh on the ladder.
So why didn't they play that all night last night?
It's hard for teams to flick the switch, but I think they need to make that conscious assessment. They are still a very dangerous team in dry weather, West Coast. They've played in greasy conditions the last 3 weeks, hasn't worked, and clearly there's been two horrendous losses and one loss to a team 18th on the ladder. So, yeah, it doesn't work the way they try and do it, but maybe they need to say, well, in wet weather, what are our strengths? How do we expose them? It's pretty easy. Put them all in the middle of the ground.
That reeks, though, of a team that happy to play the game on their terms outside of that, then it becomes a bit iffy.
It does. Yep.
Thank you, Duff, and thank you very much for the email. Bob, okay, let's move to Fremantle now. Joel Yeldon, firstly, love the podcast, guys, as I do Purple Rain. Great to have the email, Joel. Thank you. Secondly, can Duff and Mark Rennings at all eat some humble pie about tipping Hawks against Fremantle? Bit of a playful jab.
I'll take it straight in the mouth and a fair whack as well. Who's that, the correspondent? But
Joel Yeldon.
Joel, I was wrong. I can say it. Unlike the Fonz, I was wrong. I'm sorry. Unlike my wife, I can say I was wrong. I'm sorry. We got it right. You know what? We both, Duff, went on the basis, I think, of
happiness insurance.
The happiness, but also Launceston being such a ground of dominance for Hawthorn. And they've been a bit up and down with the Hawks' form. And, yeah, we were proven wrong early on. Very early on.
I would eat the humble pie on the podcast, but I was taught not to talk with my mouth full.
Whoa, very good.
Wow. Very good.
Some of his sharpest work there, Duff.
Let's stay with Freo. JB in May Lances and the Perth caller. How good is Perth? So I saw an article in the AFL stating Rory Lobb's future being unclear at Freo with the AFL club with Freo despite 2 years left on his contract. What is the panel's thoughts on this? Do Freo fight for him or potentially at a higher draft pick for him if he looks to leave? He played well on the weekend. He's got 20 goals and 18 points for the season so far.
We'd like to see him do a lot more consistently, Rory Lobb. I think we've had this discussion plenty of times. I think I'm probably a bit more of a fan. Is that fair to say?
Just don't discount the fact that Colin Young, his manager, might just be in there just maybe just dropping a couple of bits of information.
He comes out of contract at the end of 2022. So therefore he's contracted. He doesn't get traded unless Fremantle are prepared to do the deal.
Oh, right.
But the other thing is that Skeet is absolutely right. Youngie is the manager, very savvy manager. He's had pretty good form recently, so this is a good time to have the conversation. And, you know, throw it out there that he might want to go back to Melbourne or might want to go to Melbourne. Yeah. So he comes from here. If you're Fremantle, he's a prefer to keep because Rory Lobb, even when he frustrates the hell out of us, he's always in their best 22 because of the role he plays. But you'd be – if anyone wanted to come for him
– yeah.
You'd be saying, well, what are you prepared to offer? And, you know, the other thing is that I'm not sure anyone's coming for him at $700,000 a year.
No, he's not a non-negotiable that you're just not going to give up.
No.
But you need to have something very much in your favour to make that happen. I think he'll stay. I don't think there's going to be a movement, particularly in the next 12 to 18 months. And hopefully by that time, Fremantle will be climbing even further up the ladder.
This one does scream as the most obvious agent drop I think I've ever seen because I just put it in my head. He's three of the last four games, he's played pretty well.
Oh, there have been a few of them.
Just drops in and goes,
oh, there have been a few of them over the years, don't worry.
This one seems pretty obvious.
And kudos to the manager because they're just trying to, they're working for their client. Well,
that's their job.
That's right. Lydia from the Bullwater Stained Streets of Dianella. Thank you, Lydia.
That's a fair call.
Yeah. Okay. If Hawthorn are in the same ladder positions this time next year, what is the motivation for Clarko to keep making this team better and stronger when he could very well be coaching against that team in the year after?
That's a really good point. I think if he's coaching next year, he's. I think you've got to admire Clarko, and he's got the team at heart. He's nurtured this team, so I think for him, he would like to depart with the squad moving forward. I don't think there'd be any of that, but it's a really good point.
I don't buy the fact that he's going to be coaching.
Yeah, well, neither of you boys do.
But Clarko adamantly said about 3 or 4 days ago that he's going to be there. There's a bit of a talk that he might just take a year away and go and study in the United States. All of those factors are in the air. I'm just not convinced it's going to work a year of him coaching with Sam Mitchell over his shoulder.
He has to say that he wants to coach next year. There's $1 million on the line.
Yeah.
Mm.
So Hawthorn has kind of left the door open for him to coach somewhere else. So Clarko's going, well, I'm here, I'm contracted, pay me. And Hawthorn's going, well, if someone else wants the four-time premiership coach, here he is.
There's really only – I mean, given that the Graham Wright situation, the relationship they have, Clarko and he, that you'd think Collingwood's still very much iffy. Carlton.
Would he be any chance for that for the AFL job?
No.
Why?
He's a coach. Mm. I mean, Brad Scott has made that transition. Clarko would be a nightmare at AFL House, wouldn't he?
Yeah, I think it's in his DNA.
They do call him Little Caesar, you know.
Mm-hmm. I'm aware of what they call it. I just think he does think a bit laterally, Clarko. It just might be something that could be on his radar, as is the studying in the US for a year, which he flagged years ago. He flagged that during the dynasty, that eventually he would like to do something along those lines.
But often when coaches think laterally, it's to help their cause. It's all done with self-interest in mind, more often than not, may I say.
There'd probably be rule changes every second week with him not having to bypass the AFL currently. Imagine you're taking out the middleman.
And the last quick one for quarters on that Hawthorn. Mm. If they finish the season really poorly.
What do you mean? They're going to finish bottom two.
No, but I'm saying if they really fall away with results, I'm serious here, does that change what might happen in 2022 with regards to the transition?
I don't think so. I think the club power brokers are expecting that to happen. I think if you look at the list where it's at, the players who are out now, Jyath's now out for the season. So I'm not sure. Hardwick's out at the moment. So I just, they're losing players all the time. I think they're gearing up for a really poor finish to the season and no doubt gearing up for some early draft picks that they're pretty happy about.
What happens if in round three next year, Clarko says to Sam Mitchell, I want to play Granger Barras at centre half forward? And Sam Mitchell says, no, he's a power defender.
Well, Clarko's the coach. Clarko gets his way, but I'm not sure if they're not
work,
able. I'm not sure if they're not able to get around that. Where Hawthorn's at the moment, right? Is it about wins or is it about development?
Well, probably so development,
He may well acquiesce.
Very hard to have two bosses in the room.
Okay,
we'll just stay with this quickly because it's the exact topic that Luke Thompson from the East Coast mentioned. He was saying, as an Eastsider, this is my favourite AFL podcast. Given the AFL world is talking about the Hawthorn succession plan, it got me thinking about the mentor-protege relationship within coaching. To me, it seems like an absolutely fantastic thing, a great coach's ability to mentor a successor and guide them through a period of time, teaching them the ins and outs of being a head coach, and yet everyone seems to be hating the idea. Why does it seem so toxic, and am I completely off the mark? Is it an ego thing?
Well, I think the difference is, I think there was always going to be the succession plan with Mitchell coaching. I just think it was foisted on Clarkson before he expected it. That's where the issue is. But I'm not sure if they can't resolve it. I don't think it's – I think of any people involved in football, I think those two can.
Yeah. You know, the one we don't talk about is the Essendon succession plan. But you know what the difference in the Essendon succession plan is? Is that Ben Rutten was coaching the team on game day last year, and John Worsfold was basically saying, well, I'm here, you're paying me, I might as well do something while I'm here. So he was down on the bench, he was giving players feedback. But basically the game plan was Ben Rutten's. He was the game day coach. John Worsfold took a lot of the heat from the media to enable Ben to grow into that role. It makes it kind of funny when we talk about the transformation in Essendon because, you know, everyone's giving Ben Rutten credit for it when he was effectively coaching the team last year.
It also makes it kind of funny when you ultimately, when his career's over, you look at Ben Rutten's win-loss record.
Yeah.
Last year doesn't count.
No, that's true. There have been a couple of successful transitions. I mean, Paul Roos and John Lomai, yes. That was done relatively successfully. And
very successfully.
And as it stands, Roos to Goodwin, albeit with some heartache in the last 12 months, as it stands, they're on top of the table, thereabouts, and have a real shot this year. So, look, we point out the negatives with the Buckley, Malthouse situation and others that have come and gone. Not too many that I can think of, but there have been a couple that have worked, for sure.
Last one, depending on how long it goes for, could be short or could be very long. Sam Reid from Perth. I've been saying he's from Sydney because I was confused with the GWS and Sydney Swans. Sam Reid, what's it like being in the media box, guys? How enjoyable is it to watch games in there? Any interesting stories from the box?
It is great to watch footy in the media. There's great camaraderie normally in the box for those who get on. Those who don't get on tend to sit a little bit further away.
Except on grand final day when the Herald Sun's sitting on one side of the aisle and the Age is sitting the other side of the aisle.
That's right.
There can be a bit of ill-tempered banter goes on.
I haven't been in the press box for a while, but is there still good food? Always good party pies, sausage rolls, sandwiches.
It's not great for your waistline in winter going and feasting as we did last night. Yeah, I sit in a radio box. The banter's good. Off-air stuff you're chatting about.
Are you sure it's good?
Yeah, it is good. I enjoy it. I actually, and it's all in all honesty, talking to guys like say Will Schofield, Glenn Jakovich, or Carl about their experiences and what they've done. Yeah, we're pretty privileged to sit up in those positions,
centre wing,
cover a game we love. Spot. Get paid to do what we're doing. So, no, it's fantastic. And sometimes, even though you're walking into the ground last night and it's cold and it's wet, it's a Monday night, you'd sometimes rather be at home. But guess what? A lot of people would die to be in your position. So, yeah, no, really rapt to be able to do it as long as Duff, myself and Quarters have.
Yeah, no, it's a privilege. They're the best seats in the house. They're high up. You're in a comfortable chair. You are fed. And you are fed to within an inch of your life. That starts with triangle sandwiches and some very tasty patisserie sort of arrangements. There's coffee. There's a coffee machine. We get sausage rolls and party pies, and we get what do you call the stuff they do? Is it charcuterie? Is it charcuterie they do at the end?
Don't get them in my radio box. I can tell you right now.
No, they have cold cut meats.
Oh yes, it's like a
and ciabatta breads and dips after the game.
Mate, Duff, don't talk it up too much. I'm trying to sound like men of the people here.
By the way, we're talking about the facilities now, but I can remember going back and sitting in the press box at the Witten Oval or the Western Oval as it was.
Oh yeah,
there.
I've been there.
Victoria Park.
Yes, been there too.
So remember the old wooden press box at Princess Park, the white with the Avco advertising on
yes.
it? Terrific. You know, it was old, you know, Geelong was an old wooden thing. You had to climb the stairs. The old Subiaco, you had to climb 1,000 stairs to get to the
press box. The old members grandstand.
And I tell you, with all this, you know, with the new facilities comes the sad stories. I can remember Peel Thunder's first game. They didn't have a press box down in Mandurah, and Ross Lewis and I sat in a car. It was pouring rain. We couldn't see the game, so one of us had to stick our head out the window for a five-minute period while the other scribbled notes. It's good teamwork.
A very funny moment, the old member stand at the Subiaco. So the press box where we sat was right behind the corporates that was watching West Coast games. One game, there was a bloke in front of us kept on standing up, and Gary Stocks, who now works at West Coast, got a bit impatient with him. He was sitting next to me, and Stocksy kept fastidious notes about all the games. He used to use different coloured texters and everything for, you know, different scores at different times of the game. He got Jack of this bloke standing up in front of him, wasn't paying a lot of attention to who the bloke was, banged on the window very firmly and yelled very loudly, "Sit down, you dickhead." Bloke had a ponytail, dark hair.
I know who this is, yeah.
Well-known member of the, but yeah, colourful identity, I think, yes. Is the term we use, yes.
And I think he turned round, and I was there, actually.
We were all under the table when he turned round.
I think, like you, Duff, I had my hand up saying, "Wasn't me."
And one quick commentary story to finish off. We talk about Optus Stadium, how well-fed and how elite it is. Going back to the year after Dennis Cometti finished his stint in the AFL commentary box, the Western Bulldogs, Sydney, 2016, I was lucky enough to be there and filming while he called that famous victory and Luke Beveridge, it's time for a beverage. His next game behind the microphone was with myself and Peter Bell at Leaderville Oval between Peel and East Perth. At that stage, two alignment clubs. And we had, I think, four goals kicked in the opening quarter, and Leaderville Oval, talk about old stands, that is quite derelict now. And we're sitting up there, Dennis comes to sit down, and after about 5 to 10 seconds, apart from the fact that it was about 1964 vintage, there was the smell of urine in the commentary area. And I just turned to Dennis midway through the quarter in a commercial break and said, "Dennis, I'm so sorry, but your last game behind the microphone was at the MCG, 100,000 people calling a magnificent game of football in exquisite facilities, and now you are here sitting with, I'm sorry about the smell and the facilities and the match is terrible, but welcome back to the WAFL." And he just said, in his inimitable style, "Marg, I came in optimistically and went out misty optically." And he's a little joke, but he handled it very well. But yes, despite the Optus Stadium facilities being terrific, when I do the waffle, and these gentlemen don't have to fall to the level of going to some of these other venues.
We've done plenty of waffle games.
I know. I say it in jest. But yes, it makes you realise that yesteryear is still alive in some parts of suburban grounds.
Okay, thank you very much for joining us today. We have been brought to you by Tab Touch. Get closer to the AFL action with Tab Touch. Please gamble responsibly. Please call Gamblers Help on 1800 858 858 if you run into any difficulties. We'll be back on Thursday. We'll be running the ruler over the Geelong Fremantle clash at Optus Stadium. Critical game for the Dockers as well as the rest of round 18. We look forward to joining you then.
If you're a fan of the podcast, why don't you send a message to Josh's mailbag? Have you figured out how to fix footy? Are you trying to settle a debate with a mate? Or maybe you just want two of Australia's most experienced footy journalists to turn their attention to an AFL issue of the week. Send to the mailbag at josh.garlep, that's G-A-R-L-E-P-P, at wanews.com.au. And also remember to like, subscribe, and of course, tell your mates so we can make this as big and as good as possible. Thanks for listening.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast on the game.
You know who? It's unbelievable.